President Obama has gone coast to coast this week, stumping for his new budget proposal, a plan that he hopes will shrink the government's ballooning debt. Republicans are pushing their own plan, developed by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, and sorting through their conflicting claims is no small task. So we asked NPR's John Itzde for some help.
Even in the best of times, budget plans arrive in a blizzard of numbers. When the country faces daunting fiscal challenges, as it does now, the storm gets even more blinding. Here's President Obama unveiling his plan last week.
So this is my approach to reduce the deficit by $4 trillion over the next 12 years. It's an approach that achieves about $2 trillion in spending cuts across the budget.
The president goes on to tout a $1 trillion reduction in interest payment on the debt and another trillion in cuts to so-called tax expenditures. A week earlier, Chairman Ryan used visual aids to launch his budget.
Now, let me walk you through some of the charts and some of the numbers. If you take a look at the screens on the side here, first of all, let's look at spending.
Ryan goes on to summarize $5.8 trillion in spending cuts and $4.4 trillion in deficit reduction. So both the president and Chairman Ryan are claiming around $4 trillion in budget savings. That seems clear. But, says Maya McGinnis of the Bipartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, it's not that simple.
The question is, saving compared to what? And that's where you get lost in the confusing, crazy world of budget baselines.
For instance, by law, Chairman Ryan is required to use the Congressional Budget Office baseline as his starting point. But that baseline presumes the expiration of the Bush tax cuts at the end of 2012 and continued high-level spending on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for the next decade, neither of which is very likely. Further complicating things, President Obama's new proposal makes a number of changes to that baseline. So the $4 trillion in deficit reduction they both claim aren't directly comparable. McGinnis's group decided to crunch the numbers for both proposals using a common baseline and the standard 10-year time frame, not the 12 years the president is using. It found that the president's plan saved about half as much as Chairman Ryan's.
A little bit less than $2.5 trillion over the same period. So an apples-to-apples comparison brings a lot of things to light.
That's largely because a big share of the president's savings come in the 11th and 12th years of his plan. Clint Stretch, who's a budget specialist at Deloitte, a consulting and financial advisory firm, says there's another way to get a handle on what a politician is doing in a budget proposal. Ask this question.
What are they saying about the level of spending and the level of tax that they desire to have as a share of the economy, as a percentage of GDP?
That number tells you the size of government that the politician imagines in the future. Chairman Ryan's proposal would lead to a shrinkage of government from almost a quarter of the economy right now to under 15% 40 years from now. That's about the size of the government back in the 1950s before Medicare and Medicaid. President Obama has a very different view, says Stretch.
The president is saying, no, you know, the population's getting older. We've made a lot of retirement promises. We ought to try to keep those. And so the government will get bigger because we have more people in retirement.
How much bigger? A couple of percentage points above the long-term average. Clint Stretch admits that in a $16 trillion economy, these numbers are hard to get your head around.
And so for a lot of people, the more important question is, are the spending recommendations and the tax recommendations that are made, do they seem like they are about the kind of country that you would like to live in?
For instance, do you want more spending on defense and less on health care for the elderly, or do you want to spend more on both? And finally, is this a vision of the future you're willing to pay for? John Itzde, NPR News, Washington.
As the days grow longer and warmer, employers who run roller coasters, water parks, and hot dog stands are preparing for the summer rush. They're seeking workers to fill jobs at or just above the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Labor advocates say it's time for those workers to get a raise. But employers insist the economy remains far too weak for a minimum wage hike. Joining us to discuss low-wage work is NPR senior business editor Marilyn G. Wax. Welcome back, Marilyn.
Hi, Leanne.
A lot of consumer prices are up this year. We talked about it, gasoline in particular. Is the government inclined to increase the minimum wage to help keep pace?
Well, certainly a lot of workers wish government would act. When the minimum wage was last increased in July of 2009, the cost of gasoline was about $2.50 a gallon. This summer, the pump price will probably be about twice that in a lot of cities. And, you know, the cost of buying your lunch is going to go up, too, because we're seeing higher prices for meat and dairy prices.
So is there any chance Congress will consider a minimum wage hike then?
No. This Congress is not even thinking about it. The last minimum wage increase was actually an automatic step increase that had been put into place back in early 2007, and that was before the so-called Great Recession hit. So even though the economy was hurting in the summer of 2009, the minimum wage at that time rose because of this built-in hike. It went up from $6.55 to $7.25. But since that time, the job market has remained really weak, and Republicans have regained control of the House. So no one really expects this Congress to impose a minimum wage increase on employers for a very long time anyway, and certainly not in response to these gas prices.
So what about the states? I mean, the minimum wage is higher in some states.
That is true. 17 states and the District of Columbia have minimum wages above the federal level. For example, in Oregon, the minimum is now $8.50 an hour. So some labor advocates think that they actually have a better chance of helping workers by focusing their efforts on state legislatures. But so far, no state has voted to increase the wage this year.
Marilyn, economists have been arguing over the minimum wage since it was enacted in 1938. Why isn't there a consensus on this issue yet?
Leanne, it's amazing how many studies have been done about this. Serious economists have looked at this issue again and again, and honestly, you could find a terrific study to support whatever you want to believe, that raising the wage reduces the number of jobs, or that modestly increasing the wage could stimulate spending without costing jobs. But it's interesting that while economists in this country have been arguing about this, officials in other countries, especially in Asia, they're going ahead and raising the minimum wage. In China, Indonesia, Mongolia, Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, all of these governments are in the process of either introducing or toughening their minimum wage laws.
But if the economic studies are so contradictory, why are those governments imposing them?
Well, I can't say whether or not the Asian government leaders are reading the same economic journals that I do, but they are seeing that their low-wage workers are getting angrier about these rising food prices. So rather than risk political unrest, they're trying to boost the wages of their workers so that people can keep up with these rising food and fuel prices.
NPR Senior Business Editor Marilyn G. Wax. Thanks as always, Marilyn.
I'm happy to do it, Leanne.
Okay. Here we go again. NPR's Scott Horsley reports that when President Obama visited Virginia, Nevada, and California this week, he put special emphasis on the cost of gasoline.
It didn't take any prompting from the audience to get Mr. Obama started on the subject of gas prices. He brought it up himself, again and again, as if to say no matter how far removed official Washington may seem, he understands the challenges that American drivers are facing.
Now, I admit, Secret Service doesn't let me fill up my own tank now. But I remember before I was president, the last time gas prices went up this high. It's tough.
In fact, gasoline prices hit their all-time peak in the summer of 2008 when Mr. Obama was running for president, and drill, baby, drill became a rallying cry for his Republican opponents. Back then, Mr. Obama argued there was no quick fix for $4 gallon gasoline. He made that point again this week.
Every time gas prices go up like this, like clockwork, suddenly politicians look around and they discover high gas prices. And they're shocked. And they get in front of TV and they say, you know, we've got a three-point plan to bring gas down to $2 a gallon. And then when gas prices go down, nothing ever happens.
Mr. Obama himself has had little success pushing Congress to adopt a comprehensive energy strategy. He has managed to raise fuel economy standards and boost investment in electric cars, but neither of those is a quick antidote to high gas prices. So Thursday, the president added a new message, announcing the Justice Department has teamed up with state and federal regulators to root out any manipulation in the oil and gasoline markets.
We're going to make sure that nobody's taking advantage of American consumers for their own short-term gain.
This search for a villain to blame for high pump prices has a familiar ring to it. And no wonder. Former President Bush called for a similar investigation almost exactly 5 years ago, when the price of gas was nearing $3 a gallon.
Americans understand, by and large, that the price of crude oil is going up and that the prices are going up, but what they don't want and will not accept is manipulation of the market. And neither will I.
Back then, in April of 2006, I talked with John Cecil of the Federal Trade Commission. He told me the energy business probably gets more scrutiny than any other industry. So much the federal government is investigating gasoline prices pretty much all the time.
Our staff looks very carefully to see if there is some kind of anti-competitive conduct going on that might explain the price. And we have found in virtually every situation, really every situation, that market forces are generally causing those situations.
But even though they almost never find any wrongdoing, Cecil said this week, investigators will keep the oil and gasoline industries under a microscope. President Obama acknowledged that as long as American drivers depend so heavily on gasoline to get around, they'll be vulnerable to spikes in the price of crude oil.
The truth is, the only real solution to helping families at the pump in the medium and the long term is clean energy. That's how we'll save families money. That's how we'll reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We've got to develop new technologies to lessen our reliance on a fuel that is finite and that we've got to import from other countries.
And none of that is likely to happen before this summer's driving season or the 2012 election. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. President Obama's reelection fundraising seems to be in full swing. The president has returned from the West Coast with a few million dollars more in his campaign's bank account. Now, in a moment, we'll take an early look at the field of Republicans who are seeking their party's nomination to run against Mr. Obama. But we begin with NPR's Ari Shapiro, who's traveled with the president this week as he tried to rekindle campaign magic.
The 2012 presidential election is still a long ways off. How long? Well, here's what happened when supporters started chanting 4 more years at a rally on the Sony movie lot this week.
4 more years! 4 more years!
Well, actually, technically, it's about 5.5.
Spider-Man 4 recently completed filming right here. Now the cavernous soundstage was full of clamoring fans who treated the president like a superhero.
This campaign is in its early stages, but now's the time you can step up and help shape it and make sure we're out of the gate strong.
Thanks to this trip, the campaign is out of the gate strong financially. Here's a quick breakdown of the numbers. 2 days, 2 cities, 6 fundraisers. 2 were big raucous events like the one at Sony. The other 4 were smaller, quieter, and far more lucrative. Donors paid as much as $35,800 for an intimate meal with the president. That's the most an individual is allowed to contribute by law. When President Obama left the Sony movie lot, his motorcade raced down empty Los Angeles streets to a restaurant where Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg, George Clooney, and other Hollywood glitterati were waiting at a small dinner. Recording was not allowed. The Obama re-election campaign won't say exactly how much was raised in all these fundraisers. Estimates put the total safely north of $4 million. But even in these pricey, glittering bubbles, the real world managed to intrude. During a fancy breakfast at San Francisco's St. Regis Hotel, donors at one table stood up and complained in song.
We paid our dues. Where's our change? We paid our dues. Where's our change?
It was not the only time that liberal discontent broke out. Wednesday night at the big San Francisco rally, Mr. Obama said, "Change is tough.
I know there are times where some of you have felt frustrated because we haven't gotten everything done as fast as we wanted."
People in the audience started to shout. Gay marriage, clean energy, single-payer health care. For a moment, it felt like the rally might be spinning out of control.
See there? Case in point, right? All right. See, I knew I'd open up this can of worms.
And disaffected liberals are hardly President Obama's most serious problem. His approval ratings have slipped into the mid-40s. At one private fundraiser, he suggested that if gas prices were lower, his poll numbers might be higher. Nevada banker Lonnie Thomas lends some support to that theory. Between fundraisers, the president flew to Reno, Nevada for a town hall meeting. And Lonnie Thomas did not vote for the president in 2008. He feels neutral about him now, and he's very aware of the impact gas prices are having on this community.
Some of my small business clients who have delivery businesses or who rely on delivering product or whatever, it's hurting them. You can see that the higher gas prices are cutting into their profit margins, and they're having to adjust, lay people off, or curtail certain areas of their business in order to cover the increased cost in gas.
Now, I admit, Secret Service doesn't let me fill up my own tank now. But I remember before I was president, the last time gas prices went up this high. It's tough.
The focus of these town hall meetings was supposed to be the president's long-term plan for cutting the deficit. But gas prices came up at every stop. In Reno, he announced that the Justice Department will investigate fraud and manipulation in the oil and gas markets. As the presidential motorcade zooms by stations selling unleaded at more than $4 a gallon, the man in the limousine needs to remember that the voters are still pumping their own gas. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, traveling with the president.